Hello, Caleb.
Hey, Mike. How's it going?
It's going pretty well. How are you doing?
Doing well. What are you drinking tonight?
In honor of our discussion topic tonight, I have made an aviation. So I'm having a little gin, a little creme de violette, some maraschino, and some lemon. It's a bit of a purpley, fruity drink, but goes well with what we want to talk about tonight. How about you?
I'm having an old pal. Rye and dry vermouth and Campari. And it's oddly complex for those three simple ingredients. I like it a lot.
Excellent. So I was thinking, as I hinted with the aviation, I would like to talk about autopilot tonight.
All right. The long-awaited topic. I think we've been alluding to wanting to talk about autopilot for a long time, and we're finally here.
The day has arrived. It's like Christmas Eve, or Christmas, I guess.
Yeah, and I think we already expect this will be a very long topic, so we're probably going to split it up into two episodes.
So tonight we can talk about the current state of the art, how autopilot's implemented, and the more tactical, practical, the tactical, practical matters about autopilot as it exists today.
Awesome. All right, sounds good. Let's dive in.
All right.
So I guess the initial context to set for autopilot and just autonomous driving, I think, is thinking about why is it important. And I think the biggest reason it's important is thinking about car crash related deaths.
Humans are terrible drivers.
Yeah, humans are terrible drivers, and we cause a lot of people to die as a result of our bad driving. And I was checking it out, and according to the World Health Organization, a staggering 1.25 million deaths a year are caused by auto accidents. And so, you know, to put that in context, that's someone dying every 25 seconds due to an automobile causing a death.
And that's just death. That's not like maimings and injuries.
Yeah, that's death. That's not accidents. That's not, you know, anything related to crashes. Crashes are way, way higher. And so it breaks down to around 35,000 a year in the U.S. But in other countries like China, it's 250,000 deaths a year. In India, it's 240,000 deaths a year. And so it's one of the top killers of people around the world, more than war, more than terrorism, more than breast cancer, more than suicide. And so it's a massive health problem, and many countries are starting to realize this and actually instituting more and more regulation around safety. But a lot of the low-hanging fruit, as it were, has been picked around seat belts being the biggest innovation in automobile safety, and then much stricter regulation around the actual safety of the vehicle and protecting the occupants. But over half of the deaths related to vehicles are not people inside the car, but actually pedestrians, bicyclists, and then other people in other vehicles, and motorcyclists as well. So as much as we make the cars themselves safer for the occupants, which we've done a really good job at over the past 100 years of trying to improve safety of occupancy, but it's actually people running into other things and people, and unfortunately, the effects of that. And so autopilot type features and autonomous driving really has the ability to take humans out of the equation and be much, much better drivers and not hit things. I think that's sort of why it's important, right? There's a lot of technical reasons why it's very cool, a lot of convenience features for people, and long-term implications for what it means if you don't have to drive. But for society, just making sure, you know, a million plus more people are surviving every year due to a preventable cause, I think is, you know, why this is so important and much bigger than just Tesla.
Yeah, I mean, there are whole charities and awareness drives and charity walks and everything for all these things that kill less people than auto accidents. And no one thinks about the deaths in auto crashes at all, really, especially in the U.S.
Yeah, I mean, we have the Mothers Against Drunk Driving in the U.S., which is very popular, a large organization. So I think drunk driving has gotten a lot of attention, but there's so many others of just distracted driving, of people being tired, and then just other human errors of us just not being great at managing a 3,000-pound vehicle at 65 miles an hour. I mean, it's just a very dangerous thing. And it's just remarkable that we think these painted lines on the street are, you know, enough to keep us safe from not running into other vehicles. and, you know, apparently over 90% of the vehicles' accidents are human error. So it's not as if these cars are, you know, making some problem or exploding or, you know, it is mostly human error. And so, you know, you could expect up to 90% of those deaths to be preventable with better computer systems.
Yeah, definitely. Obviously humans did not evolve to travel at 70 plus miles an hour. And our reaction time isn't fast enough. And I think that's not even taking into account the psychological effects of being in a vehicle where you just get more aggressive and you want to go faster. And it has all these follow-up effects that are all horrible.
Well, yeah. And the ability, you know, the requirements to get a driver's license are remarkably low, at least in the yeah. US. And, you know, we give the ability to drive this vehicle that is deadly to people whose brains aren't fully formed in the case of 16 and 17 year olds.
And yeah. Or whose brains are deteriorating in older people. And we can't take that license away because we've built up so much of our environment that you actually need a vehicle and you need to be able to drive just to exist in most of the country.
Yeah, totally. So I feel like that is sort of the background I wanted to set, that that's why this is important. And that's why, you know, beyond the fun factor of not having to drive, this is a big deal. And I think why more and more countries and car companies are going to get behind this, because once it's provable that these vehicles are safer when the computer is driving, there will be a very quick shift to it. So yeah, I think that's sort of the backdrop for the conversation.
Cool. So now, and we have just had our, our first autopilot experiences last week with our Model X test drives. And yeah, did that make you feel any more optimistic about it, or what were your impressions there?
Yeah, I mean, I'm certainly more convinced than ever after having actually used autopilot as the driver that I don't want to be driving. I trust the vehicle more. Very recently, the head of the Tesla autopilot program was speaking at a conference in San Francisco and started sharing some stats about how much they were driven, and we'll talk about that. But one of the really interesting ones that he shared was that he showed a graph of the drivable path for these vehicles in their lane, and that the vehicles on autopilot had an extremely tight bell curve around staying in the center of the lane. But when humans were in control, it was a much flatter curve, indicating that human drivers are much more variant in where they keep the vehicle in the lane. And so it was just this very stark, like almost a sharp graph of autopilot showing how much better the autopilot already is for Tesla. So I think there's just so many more indications that this is going to be the way of the future. And we're only in, you know, a year and a half out from this even being publicly available, and only one real major automaker, and you could say Tesla's a minor automaker, utilizing this technology. So we are super early, and it already has benefits, and that's just a really unusual case for technology to be so early in its sort of exposure to real people and already so clearly a win.
Yeah. I mean, I think future historians are going to look back at this automotive era, and they're going to think about it similar to how we look back and think on bloodlettings and human sacrifices and other weird things that seemed okay at the time and now just make you wonder what these people were thinking.
Yeah. I mean, the idea that it seems very obvious to me that you would be able to tell someone in 100 years that you let people drive vehicles that were 3,000 or 4,000 pounds, that were 16 years old, and there was no computer oversight. I mean, it sounds extremely dangerous and unfortunately, it is extremely dangerous. We've just become accustomed to that danger and the risk because it's so critical to our daily lives. But if it weren't that way, I think we would be pretty appalled seeing the state of affairs as it exists today. So I think the other interesting piece about all of this is that there are multiple levels of autonomy, and it's actually been codified by at least the U.S. government into different levels. So there's five levels, and so level zero is the lowest.
Clearly, this was done by programmers if it starts at level zero.
Yeah, most people would expect one, but it's zero. And so zero is, you know, the driver's in complete control of everything. And that would be sort of thinking about a car from, you know, the birth of vehicles. There's no electronics at all. Level one is that there's some level of computers involved. So electronic stability control, traction control. So things that we now take for granted as part of the vehicles are actually considered partly autonomous because the vehicles are doing something on our behalf of automatic ABS or some of these activities, but it's just very limited. And many vehicles today have that totally standard where, you know, 30, 40 years ago, that was not the case. Level two is sort of where we are now with Tesla. And it basically means controlling a few functions. So adaptive cruise control or lane centering is in level two. And level three is the next level up where we're really trying to get to in the next couple of years of the driver is sometimes in control, but the vehicle is mainly in control and able to actually navigate from point A to point B. And then level four is the final nirvana level of the vehicle is completely in control. The passenger, there don't have to be anyone driving. You could be fully asleep. The car doesn't need people inside of it, and it is completely in control. So
the full Johnny cab.
And so that's sort of where we want to get to. And so, you know, in thinking about where we came from, Tesla, Tesla has this concept of autopilot. It's their brand name for the combination of the sensors and the functionality that leads to, the ability for the Model S and now the Model X to drive in certain circumstances. And it was actually announced in 2014, in October of 2014. So relatively recently, about 2 years after the Model S came out, and it was announced at an event where they actually introduced the dual motor. So it was sort of the one more thing for that event. And at that point, Elon Musk was saying, you know, we've been able to accelerate the autopilot program a bit forward. And showed off how it would work. But it didn't actually release to customers for an entire year. And so it didn't come out until October 2015. But the cool thing is all the vehicles that were produced from October 2014 in the interim all had the hardware.
But so, the ones before didn't. I think you had mentioned that last week when you were talking about buying a pre-owned Tesla where the original Teslas up until that point cannot support it.
Exactly.
Okay.
So there is specific hardware that Tesla added to the Model S to enable autopilot, and we'll get into that in a second. And so beyond that point of the software being released in this 7.0 update, it actually enabled these autopilot features. And one of the things that Tesla said very early on was, A, this is a beta, and a beta is a software concept of just not being fully ready for all the bugs being worked out or the majority of the bugs being worked out, and sort of a caveat that there are going to be pretty big improvements coming down the road, no pun intended, and also that there are deficiencies in the experience. And so a little bit of buyer beware or user beware that this isn't quite our envisioned end state. So it's still considered a beta, even today as we sit here in 2016. So, yeah, Tesla was really the first automaker to package it up into this very sexy consumerized idea of the car is going to drive itself. And there's been speculation and sort of debate around whether or not Tesla was too aggressive in marketing this as the car will drive itself, because many vehicles, to be fair, have had some of these individual features of adaptive cruise control has been available for 5 or 6 years on many high-end luxury vehicles.
And that's where it adjusts the speed as you like come up upon another vehicle?
Yeah, exactly. So instead of just setting a dumb 70 miles per hour on this freeway, if the vehicle gets too close to a vehicle in front of it, it will slow down. And those systems were based primarily on radar. And then there have been lane keeping. They're more about making sure you don't leave the lane than driving you inside of the lane, which is a bit different. And then also, those systems tend not to work without your hands. So
do those systems? I haven't actually used a car with that. Does it actually move the car for you, or is it just an alert, like kind of when you start driving over the little turtles in the lane where your whole car starts shaking?
It's both. So some of them are just haptic feedback, so shaking the steering wheel and or making the vehicle or the steering wheel more difficult to move out of that lane. Mm-hmm. So sort of simulating it being hard to get over that lane marker. And then some do actually slightly turn you back into the lane, but they're not intended to be steering for you. They're sort of point in time fixes for issues. And they've traditionally been enhanced from safety features versus built from the mode of we want to make it so that you don't have to interact with the vehicle to drive. So they're sort of more enhanced safety than driving capabilities. So maybe this is a good time to actually describe the current autopilot allows Model S and X to steer within a lane, to change lanes with just adjusting the turn signal, which we talked about last time, managing your speed with the adaptive cruise control, being able to go all the way down to zero and resume without you interacting with the brake or accelerator, as well as automatic parking and parallel parking spots, and most recently being able to summon your vehicle from a parking spot. So if your car is parked in a very tight garage or in a parking spot where you can't open the driver's side door, you can actually press a button on your key fob or the app and the car will move without you inside of it, forward and backwards. And so that's sort of the current suite. But Tesla has already described that, and Elon Musk talks about a lot, that he expects within 2 to 3 years, we will have fully autonomous vehicles, and has talked about the idea of being in New York and summoning your car from Los Angeles. So Tesla has the ambition and stated publicly their ambition for fully autonomous vehicles, and is really the only automaker that is pushing this so publicly in a publicly released product. A lot of other car makers have talked about wanting autonomous vehicles, but they put dates of 2020 or 2022 so far out there without much proof in existing vehicles that Tesla really is the leader. And I think it's pretty safe to say, regardless of your affiliation or interest in Tesla, that they are the leader currently in semi-autonomous driving.
Yeah, well, and if they're selling cars online, that means they can actually just have the car drive itself from the factory right to your door and cut out the middleman.
Yeah, I mean, we were talking privately about some of the cool things that they could be doing in the factories, because as they have all these Model 3s being produced, they're going to need to store those before they can put them on rail cars or drive them to dealerships. So having those self-park themselves and be able to move out would be quite a nice little efficiency boost for Tesla, where all these other car makers need people to drive those cars into the parking lots on the factory.
Yeah, it's like a movie facility. Where like a lost dog makes its way across the country to get its way back to its family.
Homeward Bound style.
Yeah, exactly.
So to enable all of this, as we alluded to just a second ago, there is specific hardware that's added to the vehicles. And one of the general principles of autonomous driving, as you can imagine, is you want to make sure the vehicle, even if one thing goes wrong, it won't crash, both the software as well as the vehicle. And so that means you need some redundancy. And so right now, the vehicles have a forward radar, and so that can look very far down the road and detect solid objects. So other vehicles ahead of you and solid objects that might be in the way, like a wall or something. They also have a forward-looking camera that's actually mounted in the rearview mirror looking out the windscreen. So like we talked about last time, it actually it benefits from the windscreen windshield wipers, keeping the view of that camera clearer than if it were mounted on the outside and debris and things were getting its way. And then there, so that's helping you see forward and making sure you're not going to run into other vehicles, and understanding where the lanes are and seeing the lane markings, because the camera can see those textures of lane markings. And then you have, imagine there's 12 ultrasonic sensors all around the vehicle, and those can sense both hard objects and soft objects like people. And so that creates this cocoon of a few feet around the vehicle. So they're not very long range, they're pretty short range, but those help with detecting if a vehicle's in your blind spot, or if someone's encroaching on you, or if there's a child nearby or behind you. And so those help with the side cocoon.
That's interesting that blind spot is also a very human term too. What is a blind spot to an autonomous vehicle?
Exactly. I mean, that's the really cool thing, is like why I feel so much more confident already is the car can see 360 degrees. Like I can never see 360 degrees. And the other thing is, you think about a human, we're looking forward or sideways, or, you know, it's all these or options. We're not looking everywhere all the time.
Right.
And the car is. And the car is sensing at millisecond levels, and we're not, and can sense distances in centimeters, and we can sense them in generally inches, maybe feet only, especially at high speeds. So, you know, the sensing capabilities of the Tesla already, I would say, are clearly better than a human, for sure. Unfortunately, they're not quite good enough for full autonomy.
Well, the eyes are there, but the brain isn't quite there yet.
Well, actually, the eyes still aren't there.
Okay.
So there's going to be upgrades in the sensor suite. So Elon has said that the current sensor suite, so all those things I just described of how the car can see, essentially, are considered the sensor suite and autopilot hardware 1.0.
And that's it's a Cyclops, though, right? It doesn't have binocular vision.
That's correct. Yeah, it sees through one camera. So it's going to need...
So it's a dim-witted Cyclops driving your car at the moment.
Yeah, but unfortunately, or fortunately, smarter than most of the drivers of it, that there's going to be a hardware V2 that will be coming in the future, in the relatively near future, that will enable the fully autonomous driving capabilities. And one of the things that's important, as you just sort of alluded to, is there's both sensing, so what the car can actually notice, so what are the senses built into the vehicle. And then there's the software and the sort of policies around how the vehicle will interpret that data to then move around the physical world. And so sensing is actually, we have all the sensors we need technically designed and available to install in vehicles today. And so within the next year or two, vehicles will have the ability to have all the extra cameras. They're going to need a few more cameras, a few more radar, but it's sort of a doubling of the sensing capability to enable full self-driving. So we don't need a technology breakthrough to enable sensing that would enable self-driving vehicles. So that's the really cool thing is... Tesla and the company that supplies a lot of the hardware and some of the software as well that helps the Tesla's autopilot work have already announced that for 2018, there are already two automakers that are going to be launching fully autonomous vehicles. And we can bet that Tesla is one of those.
They just teased that. They didn't actually announce who the two were.
Yeah, so that happens to line up pretty well with the Model 3. So my current belief...
This is a self-serving belief here.
Yeah, my current belief is that the Model 3 will have the new sensor suite and have the ability and have the future proofing to do fully autonomous driving. The software component and the actual ability to do it, I don't believe will be ready at launch, but I think the vehicles will have that capability. So that's sort of a quick overview of the sensing.
And who is the company that is doing this?
It's a company called Mobileye. They've been around since about 2004, and they got their start actually doing their sort of whole thing was that cameras are a really valuable sensor for vehicles, And they started with safety features, some of these adaptive cruise control features, identifying pedestrians, reading traffic signs, reading speed limit signs. And so they've been working with top manufacturers from BMW to Audi to Ford to GM to Opel, all these vehicle OEMs for a very long time, and providing them sensors. In listening to some of their conference calls and reading some of their investor decks, one of the challenges that they identify is that most automakers are not willing to spend money on these features and adding any extra cost to a vehicle. When you multiply it by 10 million vehicles, becomes a very large expense. And so because many of these automakers haven't felt there's demand or have the software engineering teams to actually make use of many of these sensors, Mobileye sort of was this quiet behind the scenes manufacturer of these chips and sensors. And now that Tesla's come on the scene and just generally the software has started advancing, they become a much larger player, and the company's value has grown quite a lot. But they're the primary delivery of these sensors and some of the core software that even Tesla uses.
Yeah. So they're essentially the Corning that was sitting there with their Gorilla Glass and making little things until Apple came along and put it on the iPhone.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, like they've had these abilities and they've been trying to convince automakers to put them in. And the automakers just kept deferring and demurring on it. And then Tesla came along and has really pushed it. And, you know, the Mobileye CEO has said that Tesla is really pushing the boundaries and the fastest OEM. Because the other thing we've talked about in the past is that most automakers have a 6 to 10 year time horizon on any new vehicle program. So the 2020, Jeep Grand Cherokee is already pretty much done.
And then when you think that that's going to be in service for probably 6 to 10 years after that, that creates a almost 2-decade-long technology lag.
Yeah, replacing the fleet takes 40 years, and most cars are kept around for 12 years plus for useful life. So, yeah, I mean, the ability to have this actually impact, you know, every vehicle is going to take a long time for sure.
Yeah, well, I guess there are governmental interventions like the cash for clunkers and the initiatives to kind of get the gas guzzling polluting cars off the road. You could imagine a future where, I guess we're saving the future for the next episode, but you could imagine a future where it's in society's best interest to get these unsafe human piloted vehicles off the road.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that, similar to what we're seeing with drones, where drones were launched as a technology and now regulators are starting to clamp down, you could imagine that the restrictions for driving keep increasing. And so many people would not be able to pass those driving restrictions, and many cities would not allow certain types of vehicles. I mean, London already has such a high tax on vehicles coming into the city center that they may have exceptions for driverless vehicles, for instance.
Yeah, you could even imagine like a city like London or Manhattan or San Francisco requiring self-driving mode. Like as you cross the city limits, like you basically your car takes over.
Yeah, I mean, the same way that you can't drive a horse, you know, in a city use a horse in the city.
You've never been on a horse, have you?
I have been on a horse. I just am in this mixed metaphor world right now.
Your family in Montana is crying at the moment.
I know. It's unfortunate. We have horses, so I'm sorry. all I wanted was a faster horse. So the sensing stuff is, there's the physical sensing hardware. But one of the other questions is, well, why can't you just do this with an internal combustion engine car?
Right.
Like, why is this related to electric vehicles? And it isn't necessarily related only to electric vehicles, but electric vehicles have a lot of advantages. So some of the things that Tesla has talked about as really big advantages is, one, the electric motors have millisecond response rate, which means that when the computer wants you to accelerate or wants you to adjust the speed of the vehicle, it can do it very quickly and very reliably, where relying on a gasoline engine, you need to know how quickly, how fast you're going, all these other things that are going to be a lot slower to respond. Also, the Tesla Model S already has electromechanical brakes, which is in comparison to vacuum assist brakes, which essentially just means that they can brake very fast and very reliably. So if your car tells you you need to brake right now very hard to avoid hitting something, the Tesla has a much faster response time. So, you know, a human's response time is so slow that it doesn't matter with traditional vehicles. But for a computer, actually the long lead time was the current set of brake systems and internal combustion engines are slower than the computer's response time. So they're kind of waiting on the car to slow down. Where with the Tesla, they're so much faster that the Tesla autopilot system can actually respond and make the physical world and through the car respond a lot faster. And then the other big component to think about is the steering is all electronic anyways. So you don't have to add motors to the steering column, for instance, to move the steering wheel. It's already electronically controlled. The steering wheel you use is really just this fake version of an input for driving.
it's like a grown-up version of the little kids' toys where it's just a wheel that you're spinning.
Yeah, exactly. It's like plugging that into your Xbox. I mean, you're not really adjusting the steering column on that car in Gran Turismo. It's just interpreting these digital signals from the resistors in the steering wheel. So all of those sort of play together to indicate that the sensors plus the electronic vehicle sort of subsystems all lead to a much more responsive vehicle that can more precisely control where it is in the real world, which is really important for safety.
Cool. So how much so Tesla has this out here for, since what you said, like 2014 now, like how much is this being used? How much is autopilot actually driving? Do we know?
Yeah, we actually have learned two data points that Tesla has shared. So they're official data points. And so as of April 9th in 2016, so a few months, about a month or so since we record this, there were 47 million miles driven with autopilot.
And so 47 million?
47 million miles driven with active autopilot turned on.
Wow.
Yeah. And that's around 50,000 or so vehicles that have it.
And so we test drove this past week, so that doesn't even count our like 40 miles that we added to that.
Exactly, no. And then as of May 24th, they just indicated at this conference that 100 million miles have been driven with autopilot active. So just for context, it took 100 and about 200 days to drive 47 million miles. And then it took only 45 days to drive another 50 million miles. So the rate of adoption of autopilot is increasing at almost 4 to 5x what it took. So really, really fast adoption rate. So people are getting more and more comfortable with it, and the number of miles is increasing. And the other really cool stat we just got was 780 million, so nearing a billion miles, have been driven by cars with autopilot hardware equipped. And what's interesting is that Tesla actually is monitoring those miles and using those to run simulations on future software, and both for bug fixes as well as collecting that data to build better maps of the world, as well as use that to then train their future systems that have yet to be released.
Oh, so that means as you're driving around in your autopilot equipped Model S or Model X, you're actually training the Tesla system, the autopilot system, how to drive based on how you're driving.
Exactly. That's the really cool thing about autopilot and Tesla's particular approach is that every Tesla has both Wi-Fi and 3G or LTE modems, so they can connect to the internet. And so as you're driving around with an autopilot-enabled vehicle, you are sending telemetry data back to Tesla about the things you're doing. And they've even said that they notice when you're driving an autopilot and you turn autopilot off, that's a signal to their engineers to then take a look at what were the conditions right before that moment and right after that moment to understand why did you turn that off. And a lot of users of Teslas are already reporting that their daily drives are getting better and better already. Just a few months after it's sort of been released, you know, a year or so after it's been released, that it's being better through turns. It's able to not try and lunge for exits as much. Better able to deal with less accurate line paintings. And so, yeah, the Tesla system is learning from the human drivers that are going around all across the world and generating millions and millions of miles a day of driving. And all that data is being used by Tesla to improve their algorithms. And as we know, especially for these machine learning algorithms, more and more data, training data, is extremely valuable asset to improving the quality of the end simulation and then software that's used to make these real-time predictions.
Right, because as you're driving around and your car is learning your route, it's actually increasing the intelligence of all the other vehicles as well. It's, I think they call it fleet learning, where instead of like one person learning something, it's like anything you learn, imagine everyone else learns it as well.
Yeah, totally. And I think that's one of the sort of very difficult things to internalize as a human, this concept that every mile that's ever been driven by an autopilot vehicle is potentially available as a learning set for your car. And so what that means is, imagine there's 1,000 people driving around Connecticut, and they're driving 95 and all the different highways and level streets in Connecticut. And then you end up going to Connecticut. All the things that have been improved about the Connecticut routing system, driven by all those local drivers, when your Tesla shows up and driving in Connecticut, it's benefiting from that because its software is being updated at a regular cadence to learn all the things those other drivers have done. And for the area you live in, you are helping to contribute to that. So as Tesla sells more and more of these vehicles, and imagining selling hundreds of thousands of them with a Model 3, the same way that folks like Waze and Google Maps and Apple Maps improve their traffic understanding and just their general routing through millions of people using them, Autopilot already is improving. And this is something that is core to Tesla. This is not a Mobileye feature. This is something Tesla has built in-house. And what's really cool too is, when you think about a map today and you use turn-by-turn directions, Google Maps now can tell you what lane you need to be in, but Google Maps doesn't know what lane you're in because the resolution of GPS isn't fine-grained enough to orient you on one lane or another. But Tesla actually now has such high-resolution maps that they're starting to build the foundation that will lead to fully autonomous driving, because you're going to need both the sensors to sense what's happening, but you need a backup. And maps can be a backup for sensing and letting you know where you are in the lane, whether or not this is a safe lane to be in, what speed people travel in this lane usually, what's coming up ahead. And so right now, you can't put in a destination into your Tesla and have it drive you there. But that's the future we're not too far away from, where I could be in California and in San Francisco and put in a destination of Disneyland, and the vehicle will actually be able to navigate me to Disneyland because many other vehicles have driven there already, and so it knows what pathways people usually take and what are safe pathways, but also the sensor suite will be good enough to make sure that it can navigate getting on and off the highway and all these tricky edge case situations that humans take for granted that computers need to be trained on. So yeah, there's just so much coming. And the fact that these cars are connected to the internet and Tesla is such a strong indication that it's going to improve at such a faster pace than we're used to.
But hopefully a controllable pace so that your autopilot Samantha doesn't all of a sudden join with all the other autopilots and dump you and leave the earth for life in the void.
Yeah, I mean, I think that her is definitely an indication of what that final end state could be for AI. But, the car's AI is pretty limited. Its scope of interest is pretty much around navigating roads.
For now.
And Elon Musk has talked about this a lot, actually, that he is quite concerned about AI. So I don't think you'll see that coming from Tesla. Maybe GM or Toyota might get it wrong. But
he sees what they're working on 5 years from now. So you know, maybe he's trying to tell us something.
Well, at least he'll have the sort of foresight to try and prevent it or build in fail-safes.
He'll be the Sarah Connor of Autopilot.
Yeah, exactly. He'll go back in time and solve us, fix us.
So we've been talking about how Tesla is doing it. How does that differ from Google and anyone else that's currently working on Autopilot? I think General Motors just bought a startup called Cruise recently, which is just a couple blocks from my office in SoMa. And they've been rolling around San Francisco with a Nissan Leaf with all these LiDAR on top of it. But yeah, notably, like, Google has LiDAR very, very prominently on top of their vehicles. And this cruise company also had LiDAR at various points. But Tesla notably is not using LiDAR. So how do the approaches differ?
Yeah. So LiDAR is a sensing technology.
It's essentially radar with lasers instead of radio waves, right?
Yeah, it shoots out lasers, and many of them right
frickin'
now
are lasers.
Yeah, frickin' lasers out of their head. Many of them are mechanical, so they emit a laser beam, and then there's a mechanical mirror that spins around the lasers.
Which you really notice when you actually see the... I mean, I used to live in Mountain View, and we used to see the Lexuses driving around, and they always had this weird spinning orb on top that was going around at, like, I don't know, like a couple times a second spinning around.
Yep, that's the LiDAR. And so it's emitting laser out and then measuring the laser light coming back. And similar to radar and sonar and echolocation of dolphins, being able to then measure the time it takes to come back and then basically build a map of sort of the physical world. Similar to like a Kinect on an Xbox, where it's shooting out invisible light signals to you and then creating this physical map of the world. So the big difference is, obviously, Google currently does not sell any vehicles, and Google does not currently have any relationships with automakers that are bearing any fruit today. They're currently talking to automakers. And they started this project a long time ago with the Priuses, and now they're using the Lexuses. And so they drive around Mountain View and Austin, and their vehicles, they're taking the approach of, rather than augmenting traditional driving capabilities and incrementally getting to self-driving vehicles, their stated position is that as soon as you start removing the obligation of the driver to be in control, most drivers will abdicate responsibility completely. And in the moment when the vehicle needs the human driver the most, they will not be prepared to take over.
See, now that makes complete sense to me. I mean, people are already distracted when they are supposed to be paying attention. And now if you tell them that they only have to pay half attention, I mean, forget about it.
Yeah, I mean, that they did testing with this, and that in their early days, they tried putting people who were not part of the team of the self-driving cars in there. And they found that they trusted it so much so quickly that they started working on their computer. And then when the computer was not able to handle an edge case, that person did worse than a driver who was fully alert and had no self-driving capabilities. So Google's stated position publicly has been that they are looking for a complete autonomous driving solution versus the approach that Tesla and others are taking in the current automaker world of this incremental approach where you continually enhance, starting from safety features to convenience features to self-driving features. And that manifests itself both in the sort of general policy, but also in the technology choices that they're making. And so Teslas don't use LiDAR, and Google does. And Google uses LiDAR pretty much solely as their goal. And what's interesting about that is their approach is to create a very high resolution map. And when I say a map, I mean much more than the map we think about with a TomTom or a Google Maps. But imagine, you know, in the Matrix, when Neo sort of sees the entire world as code and he can see the physical world as code.
Well, see this on Street View too, when you pan around on Street View and it's all of a sudden your cursor changes to the shape of the building on the front. So it's they're clearly recognizing things in there.
Yeah, and this is at the centimeter level. I mean, they can basically create this 3D model of the world with LiDAR. And so they've created this world of Mountain View and Austin, Texas, where they're testing. And so they've created these extremely high-resolution maps that are three-dimensional. And so then the car, when it's actually driving, is measuring its three-dimensional world. And so if there are cars on the street now, those aren't in the map. And so they do a diff, and they see, okay, now I can see there are actually vehicles here. I just need to make sure I don't hit those vehicles, and I also don't hit anything that's in the map. And so it's a much sort of dumber approach where you don't need much sensing ability on the vehicle. You just need to have extremely high resolution maps of the real world. Now, the Tesla takes the opposite approach where we just talked about. They have lots of high resolution sensors on the car and a very low quality map. You know, the Tesla can drive somewhere like Antarctica and never been there before, and autopilot will work. If you dropped, you know, the Google self-driving vehicle in Texas, it wouldn't know how to drive. It wouldn't be able to go anywhere. And so that's sort of the difference is Tesla is trying to build this approach of let the Tesla drive anywhere and we'll build up from a small set of capability up until full driving. And Google is taking the approach of let's start with what everything we need to figure out to do fully autonomous driving in a set location and then later figure out how to scale that out to driving everywhere. And Cruise, as you brought up, used a similar approach where Cruise only worked in certain parts of California where they had created these very high resolution maps that then get downloaded to the vehicle. And so when you're driving, they can work. But if you were to take a Cruise vehicle and put it in a remote part of the US or overseas, it actually wouldn't be able to drive because it doesn't have enough resolution to make those decisions.
Interesting. So it sounds like the Tesla or in Tesla, that approach is more like replacing the actual human where they can sort of have some local intelligence and drive in any environment based on what they've learned in the past. And the Google approach is more of a what we would call like a strong AI approach where you've listed out everything that you need to know. And based on your perfect knowledge, you can then move on in the world.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, there's different benefits to each, and they all want to get to the point where the car can drive itself completely. So I think it's ultimately good for society that there are different approaches to it and different companies taking different approaches. And obviously, Google engineers are extremely smart. And so it isn't as if one is good or bad. They just have different intentions. And, you know, the Teslas don't have LiDAR today. There's some very practical reasons around the cost. The rigs that Google uses are many tens of thousands of dollars. And so, you know, the practicality of adding that to a Honda Civic, for instance, is, you know, it would be more for the sensors than it is for the vehicle in total. So Tesla is much more concerned about the cost and this incremental ability to get to self-driving. But Tesla believes they'll be able to get to self-driving within a few years. And, you know, they already are planning multiple years in advance. So I think they certainly have the ability to get there. And I think Google software is further from reality of regular people driving in it in the near term, you know, 5 to 10 years. But beyond that, that approach may be better long term. So there's still a lot to shake out. It's not quite clear which approach will lead to the most success long term. You know, in 50 years, which approach are we using? It's not clear. But the approach Tesla is on will lead to fully autonomous cars for sure.
Cool. All right. So that I think we covered a lot of the implementation or how it's currently implemented. And then I think we can save the follow-on implications for our environment and our society for the next episode. Is there anything else that you wanted to touch on in this one?
I think that the only other piece is that this is going to happen. And, you know, for the past 100+ years, humans have had to be driving their vehicles completely. And in the next 100 years, when we exit that 100-year period, it seems inevitable that humans will not be driving. It also seems inevitable that in the 50-year horizon, humans will not be driving. It also seems inevitable that in the 25-year horizon, people will not be driving. The question is, in that 0 from now to 25 years from now, when is it going to be that A, you will be able to, as a consumer, buy a vehicle that will fully drive itself? That B, the majority of vehicles will be self-driving, and C, that society will change as a result of self-driving being available. Because if you look back to other technology advances, being able to buy a computer as a large corporation or as a government in the 60s, is very different than where we were in 2000, where everyone could potentially get a PC. And so that's going to be the really interesting thing, I think, to talk about next, is whether when it becomes possible is very different from when it becomes important to the world at large. And especially because the replacement cycle, as we alluded to at the top of the episode, is so long for vehicles, that cars have such a long useful life, that getting the sensing abilities and the sort of capability of cars becoming self-driving is certainly going to happen far before the vehicles are actually driving you wherever you want to go and you're falling asleep in the back. And then when vehicles are redesigned to take into light the fact that people are not driving anymore, will be later. And so that's the really exciting piece. And I think the thing that probably gets most misunderstood in the press, and when people talk about self-driving vehicles, there's the most sloppiness in precision around talking about these different sort of milestones. So yeah, I think that's sort of the big thing. And recapping this episode, we're sort of in V.5 of self-driving vehicle capability today. And within the next 2 to 3 years, the cars themselves will be able to do self-driving. They will have the hardware to do it. And then it's going to be up to both the software engineers and the policymakers to make that possible. But a car you buy in 2 or 3 years that you might own for the next decade, by the end of that decade, may be driving itself completely without you. And that's extremely close relative to the length of us having cars as a species. So I'm radically excited.
Maybe you won't even own the car at that point.
Yeah, that's the other piece. And we can talk about this sort of why ownership is important today relative to transportation at large, and why train companies and wagon makers did not necessarily make it into the transition to personal transportation, which we now know as vehicles and cars, that the job of a vehicle is to get you places. And things like Uber and Lyft and Didi and others are more at the root of getting you somewhere. And so I think that will certainly come up in the next discussion.
Oh, that was an excellent teaser. All right. So let's bring it in for a parallel parking landing here.
Yes.
I tried too hard on that one.
That's okay.
If people want to complain about my terrible segues, where can they do so?
Yep. So you can tweet at us at the Tesla Show on Twitter, and you can also post comments on our episodes that we post to the website at on theteslashow.com or on Reddit, r/theteslashow. So we're trying to be everywhere you want to be.
Yeah, please reach out. I just recently learned last week that we have comments on our website. I didn't even know that.
We do, and we have some folks leaving comments there. So we're trying to be agnostic about how we receive feedback. And if you like the show, please subscribe to us in iTunes or Overcast or your podcaster of choice. And
if you really like us, write a review. That would be wonderful.
That would be cool.
As long as you're nice.
Yeah, I hear a lot of people talking about they actually help, and I haven't found any concrete evidence that they do beyond just being nice to have more reviews. But
I don't know that I've ever seen a review of a podcast before, so who knows? Yeah.
So anyways, we'll be back next week with some more discussion of autopilot. So if you have thoughts or things you want us to talk about in the upcoming week, leave us a note and we will try and incorporate it into the next conversation.
Yeah, week or weeks. I suspect we might bleed over into a third episode, so we'll see.
That's true. We still have a long time till the Model 3 launches.
Yeah, we've got like 50 episodes to fill. So yeah, please send feedback.
Yeah. All right. Talk to you later, Mike.
All right. Bye, Caleb.